tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, science fiction, later on a baseball-themed story on X-1, but right now a tale from The Mysterious Traveler, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from November 20th, 1951, called The Most Famous Man in the World.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan, and starring Lawson Zerbe in The Most Famous Man in the World.
This is The Mysterious Traveler inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we meet two people who haven't even been born yet. It's a story I call The Most Famous Man in the World. Who is the most famous man in the world? You don't know him yet, but you will, if things happen as predicted. His name is Frank Richards, and he has a very odd story. You may find it a little hard to believe at first, but so many things are hard to believe these days, aren't they? So please, keep an open mind while Frank gives you all the facts. And here he is.
I wouldn't be telling you this if Mabel hadn't asked me to. Just before she went to the hospital, she said, "Frank, you tell people exactly what's happened. Even if they don't believe you, you'll have done your duty." And I said, "All right, I would. So I'm going to tell you about the Deans." They rented our front room, John and Susie Dean. They spelled their names funny. John, J-O-N, and Susie, S-U-S-I. You see, we had an extra room in our apartment, and when we learned there was going to be an addition to the family, we decided we needed some extra money. So I went down to the paper and put in an advertisement offering our front room for rent. Then I went to work. Well, I got home about 6, and I'd hardly settled down with my paper when the door buzzer rang.
Frank, see who that is, will you, dear? I'm busy with supper.
All right, sweetheart. Yes?
Mr. Frank Richards?
Yes, that's my name.
I'm John Dean, and this is my wife, Susie.
Oh, pleased to meet you.
How do you do, Mr. Richards?
We have come desirous of renting the room which you posted in today's newsprint.
You mean the room I advertised in the paper?
Of course, the room you advertised in the paper.
It has not been allotted yet, has it?
Well, you mean rented?
Yes.
Well, no. As a matter of fact, the paper the ad is in isn't even out yet.
You mean not printed yet?
That's right. It's the morning paper. Doesn't come out until about 9 p.m., and it's only 6:15 now.
Oh, but you are wrong. It is out. We have a copy of it.
Here, Mr. Richards, you see? The City Gazette for Wednesday, June 6, 1951, old style.
1951, old style?
I mean Anno Domini. And here is your posting. I mean your advertisement. Charming front room for rent, newly furnished, kitchen privileges.
May I look at that paper?
Of course.
Well, it's my ad, that's right. But this is a final edition of the paper. It shouldn't be out now. It's not supposed to be printed until about 4 o'clock tomorrow morning.
John, we have made a mistake.
Well, what is it, Frank?
Someone come to see our front room, sweetheart. Mr. and Mrs. Dean, my wife.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do?
Oh, Frank, you mustn't keep him standing in that dark hallway. Won't you come in, see the room?
Thank you. We will.
It is very kind of you.
Room is right this way. Oh.
Yes?
Oh, nothing. If you'll come this way.
Of course. Come on, John, dear.
Well, I knew what it was that had startled Mabel. The way the Deans were dressed. I hadn't been able to see clearly in the dark hall, but once they were inside, I saw that Mrs. Dean was wearing a tight little hat and a fur neck piece and a short-skirted dress, vintage of 1929. while Mr. Dean had on an old-fashioned frock coat, a boiled shirt, and a stand-up collar, high-button shoes, striped formal trousers, and was carrying a silk-top hat. A minute later, Mabel came out, leading them to look the front room over, and joined me, looking puzzled.
Frank, did you see how they're dressed? Well, they might have gotten those clothes out of a museum.
Well, maybe they're going to a masquerade ball, but that's not the funniest thing about them.
Uh-huh.
Mabel, that newspaper they have just can't be printed yet. It's about 10 hours ahead of time.
Shh.
I think we...
Here they come.
My wife and I have been talking about the room.
And we want to take it.
Why, that's fine.
It is a lovely room. Has such a nice, clear view of the street. And we would like to stay here because we have read so much about you both. We feel that we know you.
Read so much about us?
Why, yes, you are famous. Goodness, I cannot imagine how many words...
Susie.
Yes, oh, my goodness. I mean, we have heard so much about you from people who know you. Well, anyway, we do like the room and want to rent it.
Well, I don't know. We were thinking of just one person.
We will not be any trouble at all. In your posting, I mean your advertisement, you mentioned $10 a week. We will pay $12 and in advance. Here you are. 1 month's rent. In advance.
Well, I still think...
Oh, I'm sure the deans are perfectly all right, Frank. Go ahead, take the money.
Well, if the wife says okay, Mr. Dean...
Then, here you are. Yeah,
thanks. Say...
Something the money? You're looking at it as if it were not good.
Well, no, I guess it's good all right. It's just that these are the old-style bills. The big kind haven't been in use for 20 years or more.
That Victor at the museum.
I beg pardon?
Nothing... I can explain the bills. You see, my wife and I have been living abroad. Recently, we received a legacy from a distant relative. She was an eccentric. Left us trunks of old clothes. I've noticed you staring at our clothes. And old money, too.
Oh, well, that explains it.
Well, in that case, folks, just make yourselves at home. If you've got any luggage, why...
We are having a couple of bags sent on later. But for now, we are going to buy all new things.
And about how long do you think you'll be staying, Mrs. Dean?
We can tell you exactly, Mrs. Richards. Until 3:05 in the afternoon, October 30th.
You see what I mean about the Deans being odd? Well, I've explained to you in all this detail, so you'll know just how the whole thing started. Well, the next day, the Deans went shopping and came back with a brand new, up-to-date wardrobe. And a couple of days later, two small trunks of some funny new plastic arrived, but I never saw them open the trunks. They read a lot, mostly newspapers and history books, and stayed in their room a good deal. But they were awfully nice people, very bright and gay. Well, we took to playing bridge evenings and talking.
Well, that's game and rubber. Do you want to play any more, Susie?
No, thank you, Mabel. Let us just sit and listen to the radio and talk. It is so nice to be able to talk without worrying about a monitor listening in.
A monitor?
Susie means a spy. You see, abroad, well, you have to watch everything you say these days.
Oh, that must be terrible.
It is, Mabel. That is why it is so nice to talk and not worry about saying the wrong thing.
But surely in your own home you can talk. No monitors can overhear you then.
Oh, but they can. There is two-way television in every home. They can see you and hear you. Everything you say and everything you do.
Why, how awful.
But where is this? I haven't heard of any place where such a thing has been developed. You two talk just like you'd stepped out of one of these imaginative books about the future.
What? What did you say?
I said you talked like a couple of people out of a book about the future.
Yes, Frank. I suppose we do.
But, John...
We might as well let Frank and Mabel in on our little secret, darling. They are just about to guess it anyway. You see, folks, we are from the future.
You're what?
We come from the future, Mabel. I was born in the year 2205... John was born in 2198.
Oh, no.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, a gag's a gag, but you're kidding.
No, Frank.
You are kidding, aren't you?
You know we are not kidding. Back home now, the year is 2228.
So there you have it. Two people from the year 2228 had rented our front room. People who wouldn't even be born for over 200 years. Two people from the future.
Well, Frank, Mabel, I see you are convinced now.
Yes, I guess we are. It's the only answer that explains everything. Especially that newspaper you had when you first came here, printed 10 hours ahead of time.
It came from the files of the Historical Museum, Frank.
So did our clothes and our money. We tried to get the right clothes and money for this year, but we did not have much data to go on. Our researchers were a few years out of date.
You see, we do not know too much about the everyday details of the past, back in 2228.
But goodness, I should think you could find out every detail about us in your libraries. Surely the old books and newspapers...
Unfortunately, we don't have many old books and newspapers.
Why the devil not?
For one thing, the war.
The war?
Oh, you need not look scared. It will not happen in your lifetime. Not the one I am speaking about. But when it does come, well, there will not be many books or newspapers left.
That sounds as if there won't be many people left either.
Now we must not talk about the war. In fact, it may never happen if we are successful.
If you're successful? Oh, look, you've told us this much. Now I think you've got to tell us a little more. How did you get here from 2228?
We came through a time gap, a distortion in the time field. I cannot explain it. It was developed at the Science Institute, and except for a few trial trips, we are the first people ever to use it.
Oh, all right. Well, that brings up my other question. Why? Well, why did you come, and especially here? Why were you so anxious to rent our front room that you showed up even before my advertisement was printed?
Frank, we are photographers, and we have come here into the past to make a newsreel of a political parade.
A parade?
Yes, it will take place on October 30th. It will be in honor of a candidate for the Senate, a certain Farrington Farnsworth.
Farnsworth? Oh, yes, we've heard some of his speeches on the radio, Frank.
Oh, sure, I remember. He's a real red-hot down-with-everybody-but-us kind of politician.
In 1964, he was elected president. I mean, he will be elected president.
Him? President?
Yes, Frank. And in 1972, this country became... I mean, will become a dictatorship. Goodness, it is hard to remember the difference between past and future when you are traveling in time.
A dictatorship? This country? Oh, you're joking.
No. We are very much in earnest, Mabel. Farrington Farnsworth will become our first dictator. His son will become Farrington Farnsworth the second, dictator of the Western Hemisphere. At this moment, back in 2228, Farrington Farnsworth the eighth is dictator of the world.
I guess we sat up most of that night talking, and what John and Susie told us kind of made our hair stand on end. About the dictatorship of America and the wars that followed, ending up with the big slam-bang all-out war of 2012 with only 400 million people left alive. And how the dictatorship spread over the world so that by 2228, the world was ruled by a small group living in luxury, most of them distant descendants of dictator Farnsworth
the first.
Well, there was more. But I guess that's enough to give you the rough idea. The glorious future, not the way John and Susie Dean told it to us. It made me and Mabel mighty glad we were alive now and not then. So John explained they had come back to the past to get a special newsreel of Dictator Farnsworth in his first big public appearance. Now, that's all they would say, so we let it go at that. We didn't tell anybody about them. Who would have believed us? But now that we knew the truth, we weren't puzzled by John and Susie anymore. Well, the weeks went by, and they saw as much of life today as they could. Went to ball games, the theater, all the different restaurants, and had a wonderful time. Sometimes they just sat home with us, and we listened to the radio.
Oh, this is so much fun. So much fun. I wish it did not have to come to an end.
Yes, we have stayed about as long as we can. Tomorrow is the big parade, you know.
Oh, yes, the parade for Farrington Farnsworth.
We will do our job, and then we will go back into our time.
And we'll just go on with the old routine, I suppose, as if we'd never seen you.
Well, not exactly the old routine, Frank.
No, life will be considerably different for you in the days to come, Frank. You and Mabel.
You said something like that the very first day you were here. You said you'd read a lot about us. But where?
In the newspapers, Mabel. While John and I were studying up on this time period.
In the newspapers? Me and Mabel?
To put it bluntly, old man, you are both going to be famous.
Oh, you're joking. Why should we be famous?
Oh, you don't mean the book I'm writing to make a little extra money so that when the baby gets here...
No, not your book, though it will be published.
Well, at least that's nice to know.
Well, go on, John. Tell us some more about what lies ahead of us. Look, I need to make some more money. Can't you give me a tip on the stock market? After all, you did read the newspapers. Back there in the future, you said you read all the newspapers for 100 years.
So you must know whether stocks are going up or down.
Well, yes, we do. But we cannot tell you. Really, we cannot. And besides, you will not need any such information.
But why not?
Because you are going to be famous, both of you. For a little while, Frank is going to be the most famous man in the world.
It is true, Frank. Really, it is.
Oh, I do wish you wouldn't be so mysterious. Can't you give us even a little hint as to why he'll be famous?
I could give you half a dozen reasons, but I will not. But when it happens, and you remember that we predicted it, then you will know that all this really took place. Even though later it will seem just like a strange dream.
Well, then I suppose we'll just have to wait and see, huh?
I am afraid so, Frank. And now I think we should all go to bed. Tomorrow is going to be a big day for all of us.
So, we all went to bed. Mabel and I tried to figure out what John and Susie meant. How could two average people like us become famous? Didn't add up. So we finally decided they were just kidding us and went to sleep. Well, the next day, we didn't get to talk much. John and Susie were busy. Long before the parade came past, they got a funny-looking camera out of their suitcases and started setting it up in the front room, looking out on Main Street. Well, when they finished, we could hear the bands playing in the distance as the parade in honor of Farrington Farnsworth came down our street.
Well, here he comes, Susie. Your great, great, many times great-grandfather will be coming past any minute.
Yes, I know. I suppose I will be the first person in history to see his great-grandfather 8 times removed.
Nervous?
I am a little. What will happen?
I do not know. But we will have to be prepared.
I am. I am prepared.
Hey, what are you two talking about? Is a parade inside, huh?
It is just down the street. Where is Mabel?
Oh, she's lying down. Doesn't feel like watching. I'll turn on the radio. We'll get a commentary from the car right behind Farnsworth's.
I think I can see his car now. Yes, I am sure of it.
Well, folks, here we are, halfway to City Auditorium. And so far, at least 500,000 people have greeted Mr. Barrington Farnsworth from the crowded sidewalks. This is really a triumphal day for him. All public opinion polls predict he'll be swept into the Senate by a landslide.
And he was, too. Went on to become dictator. Now his descendants keep the world in slavery.
As far ahead as the eye can see, dense mobs line the street. Victory is in the air, victory for Farnsworth and his foreign policy. Now we're going to let you listen to the band for a moment.
There he is, John, waving to the crowd.
I see him. I have the camera focused. Yes, turn it on.
Yes, John. Yes.
Hey, what kind of camera is that? It's beaming a blue light down on Farrington Farnsworth.
Please, Frank, stand back. Cut power, Susie.
Yes, John.
What? Now the blue light is gone. So what are you two up to? You didn't take any picture of that. Hey, something's happening down there.
Yes, Frank.
Farnsworth is slumping down in his seat.
Something's happened. Mr. Farnsworth has just collapsed. The parade has stopped. The crowd seems stunned. Like he may have fainted. His physician is hurrying to his side. They're trying to rouse him. I'll let you know as soon as I can find out just what's wrong.
Good Lord. John, did that blue light have anything to do with Farnsworth's collapse just now?
Yes, Frank. It caused his collapse. Now, close the window, Susie.
Yes, John.
Now the radio. Cut it off. We will not need it.
But, John, what...
Sorry, Frank.
Hey, look here. What's going on? What are you two up to?
We have just killed Farrington Farnsworth.
You just killed?
Yes. Now, we haven't much time. Susie, better pack fast.
Of course.
We will talk while we pack, Frank. Farnsworth has had a heart attack. In a minute, he will be dead. That blue light caused the heart attack. It is a weapon very popular in 2228. The secret police use it a lot.
Good Lord.
It's a favorite weapon of Farrington Farnsworth the Eighth. It helps him keep the slaves quiet.
Then you lied to me.
Yes, we lied to you. We came back to your time in order to assassinate the first Farrington Farnsworth before he could ever become powerful. We came back to prevent the future from happening. We came back to remove one man, to keep the world free.
I don't get it.
Think about it, and you will. We are leaders of an underground dedicated to freeing the world of 2228. Our scientists perfected a time machine. We cannot fight the Farnsworth dictatorship in our own time, so we came back to eliminate it in advance.
Then the future, all those things you told me, won't ever happen.
We hope not. It is what we are trying to prevent.
But Susie, you said you were a direct descendant of Farrington Farnsworth. Now, if he dies without any children, where will that leave you?
I am afraid it will not leave me any place, Frank. I just will not ever have existed, that is all. And, John, darling.
Yes, Susie.
Hold me close. I feel so strange and far away. I think Farnsworth must be dying.
I will hold you, Susie. Oh, Susie. Susie, if it could only have been different.
John, I... John...
Susie.
She's gone. She vanished. She just went out. Like a light going out.
Yes. Like a light going out. Susie has never been born, Frank. Never existed. Farnsworth is dead. Dead.
I understand, but to vanish like
that... It had to be. It is the price of freedom for the world. The whole future is different. I will go back to a world I may not even know. Now stand back, Frank. I am signaling for them to turn on the time transmitter and pull me back to 2228. Back in my own time, they hear that. They will be activating the apparatus. I'll be gone in a moment, Frank.
But what'll I tell people?
Do not tell them anything. They may lock you up in a sanitarium if you do. Remember, the doctors will say Farnsworth died of a heart attack. There will be no proof he has been murdered. Now, goodbye, Frank.
You're getting all misty, transparent. I can see through you. John! John!
Goodbye, Frank. Goodbye. Be happy with Mabel. Remember, I predicted you would be famous. Forget about us. Forget about us.
He's gone. And the trunks. Everything they brought with them. Is gone. Everything is just gone.
Well, that's the story, folks. It happened just this afternoon. John and Susie Dean from the year 2228 assassinated a man who would have become dictator. And I can't prove it. In fact, I wouldn't even have told you this, but Mabel, she felt we had to tell. Just before she went to the hospital, she made me a promise. The shock of what happened, well, it hurried things up, and we sent for the doctor right away after John vanished. We hurried her off. I'm waiting now for word that everything's all right, and I decided I'd tell you the story while I waited. You see, here... Oh, excuse me, the telephone. It may be the hospital. Hello? Hello? Yeah, speaking. What's that? A boy? Oh, that's fine. How's my wife?
Good.
Tell her I'll be right over. What? Well, you said it was a boy. Yeah, but I don't understand.
No. Oh, no. Oh, no, it can't be. They said everything's all right. And it's a boy, but not just one boy. Six boys.
So that's what John meant. That's what he meant when he said he could give me half a dozen reasons why we were going to be famous.
This is the Mysterious Traveler again. Did you enjoy our little visit from two people of the future? Oh, there are some questions you'd like to ask me? Well, I'd be glad to answer them just as soon as the program is over. We only have a minute left, you know. Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
The Mysterious Traveler, on Tuned 2 yesterday from November 20th, 1951, on the Mutual Broadcasting System. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levionier. And now a story from Ernest Canoy on X-1 called Martian Sam. This has to do with an alien on a baseball team. With this story taking place in the future, Ernest Canoy actually penned a baseball story from the past on the NBC Western Dr. Six Gun, where a Princeton alum had bet a town that they couldn't get a baseball team together within a week. Some interesting twists in this baseball story next from NBC, heard on April 3rd, 1957.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents
X minus one.
Tonight, an original story of a new pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers in a World Series of the 21st century. Martian Sam.
The whole thing started the first day of spring training. I'd gotten into camp 2 or 3 days before and started to loosen up a little. Because at my age, even batting fungos to an outfielder can tie your muscles up into knots. Although, as a matter of fact, I'd bet that I was in better condition than half the Humpty Dumpties on the club. We hadn't won a pennant since, let's see, 1997 or was it 98? And it looked like we had a permanent lease on 12th place. The Los Angeles Dodgers were in pretty sad shape, and that's the honest truth. I was standing behind the batting cage watching a couple of kids from our Tokyo farm team when Tommy Watson from the New York Times Tribune News caught me by the elbow.
Hi, Joe. Well, how's it look this spring?
Well, Tommy, the club has been considerably improved.
Mm-hmm.
Several of the youngsters are ready to deliver this year, and, of course, we expect sterling performances from our veterans. Is that what you want?
Oh, come on now, Joe, come off it. Has old man Castle loosened up enough to buy a catcher?
Not that I know of.
How about a left-handed pitcher?
Well, they're those two boys from Tokyo.
Oh, come on. They couldn't throw a cream puff across the dining room table. Well, how does it feel to be first base coach for a team that'll clinch last place by July 4th?
You're very kind, Tommy. Very kind.
I just hate to see that old tightwad Castle run this club into the ground. I remember my father used to tell me about the times way back when they were still in Brooklyn. And I can remember going down to Robinson Stadium when I was a kid to watch doubleheaders with the Denver Giants. Now look at them. A bunch of overage bums and a few kids who could hardly make the high school team. And all Castle's money goes to buy sports rockets for that screwball son of his. Oh, Joe, baseball isn't what it used to be.
The sad truth of the matter was that Tommy was putting it mild. Old man Castle, the owner, begrudged every nickel that was spent on the ball club. I don't think anybody had gotten a raise in the last 5 years. The manager was old Rabbit Cinadella, and Castle used to issue statements every year about how he had great faith in him. The truth of the matter was that Rabbit would work for less than any other manager this side of the Sally League. You'll see what I mean when I tell you that the club traveled in an old four-jet strato rocket like some barnstorming semi-pro team. I was in the locker room looking down at my feet to avoid looking around at what passed for ball players on this Los Angeles Dodgers when Rabbit came up to me.
Joe.
Yeah?
Get your pants on to come into the office.
Oh, what's the matter?
Never mind. Come on.
Okay. Listen, Rabbit. What are we going to do about a left-handed pitcher?
Later. Joe, I had an idea. I thought we could take one of the right-handers and sew the letter backwards across his shirt, and maybe that'd fool the other club.
Yeah.
Come on inside.
Or maybe we had to disguise Iron Mike, the batting practice robot.
All right, that's enough. Joe, the old man's dead.
What?
I said he's dead. Old man Castle. Heart attack. I figured we had him scared so he'd loosen up a little dough for players, and then he goes and does this to us.
Can't trust nobody.
Well, who gets the club?
His son.
What, you mean Whistling Willie Castle, a Jetstream playboy?
That's who.
But he doesn't know anything about a ball club.
He doesn't have to. Old man Castle owns 72% of the stock. And it all goes to Willie.
Well, what's going to happen?
Beats me. Probably sell us all out and buy a new rocket.
Is he here?
It was in the Earth-Moon small boat race when it happened. They got a message to him when he hit the direct beam off Luna Port. He could have landed and taken the shuttle back and made it in one day.
But he was leading in the race, so he just kept going. He's due in a couple hours.
You think you can get him to go for a left-handed pitcher?
I don't know. We'll have to try.
Of course, you've heard of Willie Castle. About once a year, he cracks up some expensive sports rocket or gets himself picked up in a survival suit by the IP, floating somewhere in an orbit around the moon. He almost got put away a couple of years ago when he took a debutante up in a Harrison Kilgore cruiser and kept her in orbit for 2 months. The old man was able to kill the abduction charges by claiming that they'd been married at the time. And one time when the old man had a couple of us up at the lodge he lives in during spring training, I saw the kid's room. It was filled with Marak heads that he'd shot on safaris on Mars. He came down to the training camp a week later. He buzzed over in a Harley Donaldson atmospheric and set the ship down in the hole between second and third, burning out half the infield. I saw a rabbit get him to one side and start talking fast, so I sneaked over and listened.
Well, Mr. Cassidy, of course you know we're all very sorry about your father's death. And
he had it coming, the old tightwad.
Oh, well, I see.
I couldn't convince him that a credit isn't any good to you, stuffed in a mattress. You got to spend, isn't that right?
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, that's what I wanted to see you about. There's a boy in one of the Milwaukee farm clubs, a left-handed pitcher. I can get him for about $30,000 and a couple of players. And
what do you mean?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right, Mr. Castle. You got to spend money. And if we could get a little help in pitching and maybe an outfielder or two...
You mean spend money for baseball players?
Well, yeah. That was what I had in mind.
Now, wait a minute. This baseball team was my father's hobby, like some old men collect stamps or play checkers. Now, in the terms of the will, I can't sell it. But I'm sure not going to throw any good money away on something foolish like baseball players.
Oh, I see.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to need all the cash I can lay my hands on.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've got a chance to buy a 3-pile nuclear eraser that'll cut 2 weeks off the round trip to Mars.
Oh, I see. You wouldn't want to spend money on anything as foolish as ballpark.
That's it. You've got the idea now. Oh, by the way, Mr. Cinadilla.
Yeah?
I find it's quite embarrassing to me to have my friends continually make fun of me because the Dodgers are in last place.
Well, as a matter of fact, that gets to be a touchy point with me, too.
Well, I'd like to see a change. So if you don't mind, would you please have them somewhere in a more respectable position, say third or second, within a month or two?
Now, look here, Mr. Castle. I can't make bricks without straw. You won't spend the credit for a ball player, and I can't...
You do your best.
Well, after that interview with the new owner, Rabbit went out and tied one on. And I had to run the ball club for 2 days till we got him straightened out. But I can't say as I blamed him. We won one game in the Grapefruit League. We played the Jacksonville High School team and squeaked out a 13-12 victory. What the Yankees and Braves did to us, I'd rather not say. We opened the season at home, and a mediocre pitcher for Pittsburgh threw a no-hitter at us. Actually, that's not quite accurate. The truth is, he just pitched, and we didn't hit anything. We lost 10 straight from opening day, and we didn't lose on the 11th day because it rained. Rabbit and me piled into his 97 copter and flew out to the Castle Estate up near Arrowhead. I was in pretty bad shape. For one thing, Rabbit's copter has a wobble, and I was feeling green around the gills by the time we dropped down on the port. Willie Castle was very excited by the time we finally got to see him. He was puttering around a whole mess of stuff piled up in the middle of the floor.
Say, how do you like this? Isn't it exciting?
Yeah. What is it?
It's a Durgo stick.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I use it in Mars in a game played between two villages. You see, all the men on one side line up, and then all the men on the other side try to knock them over with these sticks. Isn't it a beauty?
Yeah. Look, Mr. Castle, I got to speak to you. We got to have a left-handed pitcher.
Oh, you mean for the baseball team?
Yeah, that's right, the baseball team. That's what we got to have a left-handed pitcher for. Yeah.
Well, now, I can't really be bothered with details of that sort. I'm leaving for Mars in the morning. Oh, by the way, I haven't had a chance to look at the standings recently. How are we doing?
Mr. Castle, we may well set them out on record for consecutive games lost. Now, look here. You told me you can't sell the club. And you said you get tired of your friends kidding you about being last. Well, take it from me, Mr. Castle, and I know. Unless we get some ball players on that club, it's going to be last for the next 22 years.
Now, look here, Citadella.
I know you can fire me, but I don't care who you hire as manager. Unless you get him a left-handed pitcher and a couple of other players, that club is going to stay last.
Oh. Oh, well, then I'll see what I can do. Don't worry about it.
What do you mean, don't worry about it? I got to go out there every day and try to make those bums go through the motions.
Now, look, I really have to pack. And besides, I'm expecting a new shipment of equipment from Aberfitch and Combi. Now, just don't worry about it. I'll think of something. Goodbye.
Next day, we lost a doubleheader to Cincinnati by a score faintly reminiscent of basketball. And that's the way it went. Oh, we won a couple here and there. Like they say, you know, you can't lose them all. About the middle of the season, we were so far behind that the local papers just dropped us off the standings, didn't even bother to report it. It was about this time that Willie Castle returned from Mars. He came out to see us at the ballpark just before the massacre.
Well, I notice, Mr. Cinadilla, that we're still in last place.
Yeah, Mr. Castle, we are. We are lucky we are still in the league. The ball players that you've given me.
Well, I just wanted to tell you that I made a small bet with one of the boys at the country club.
Yeah?
Yes. I bet $1,000,000 that we'd win the pennant this year.
That's nice.
You don't seem to understand. I expect to win that bet.
Yeah, sure. And I expect to put on a Monroe suit and win the Miss Universe title.
I told you to leave everything to me. Now, I'd like you to come into my office, if you please. I have a few things I'd like to talk over with you. For one thing, I've signed a ball player.
You what? Oh, look here, Mr. Castle. This I got to complain about. My contract is clear. No ball player gets signed without my okay.
Just come into my office, please. I'll explain everything.
That night, when Rabbit went up to the plate to hand in the starting lineups, I could tell something was happening. For one thing, old Baldy Snuff, the umpire, was looking at the card like it was written in Arabic.
All right, who's the pitcher?
It's written right there in the card.
Saramo Castro Perbaco.
What's the matter, can't you read?
Oh, come on now, you kidding? Is he Armenian?
Nope. Martian.
Martian?
That's right. Martian.
Of course, the riot didn't really start until our pitcher got out on the mound. Fred Kurtz, the Milwaukee manager, came running out like he'd been shot from a jet. Baldy Snuff was hollering. The whole Milwaukee bench was looking for a fight, but Rabbit just stood there quiet and calm.
He can't do that. He can't do that. Look at that thing. What is that?
That's my pitcher. We call him Sam.
But you can't play with that. That ain't a ball player. That isn't even a human being.
What are you trying to pull, Rabbit?
Listen, I got my rights. I sign them legal. Here's the contract.
But Rabbit, you can't get away with that. That thing's only about 2 feet high.
18 inches, as a matter of fact.
But how's he gonna pitch? He hasn't even got any arms.
Sure he has. He's got it curled up. Hey, Sam, wind up.
That arm, it's
32 feet long.
That ain't legal. You gonna let him get away with that?
Oh, there's one other thing. On the end of that arm, look, you see? That's his eye.
Rabbit, I'm going to punch you right in the nose.
Now, take it easy, Kurtz. Take it easy.
Look, I got the papers all here. I've got the United Nations Concordat with the Marshall Colonial Government, a Supreme Court decision in the case of Schultz versus Kerouac, Kalpabor, Kalfitz, et al. It's legal. Any Martian citizen is entitled to the same legal rights and privileges as a citizen of Earth. And among those is the right to play ball in a national league.
I protest again. I forfeit the game. I... Rabbit, I'm going to punch you right in the nose.
As a matter of fact, the game that night was postponed because of riots. The next morning, everybody met in the commissioner's office, and sure enough, it was legal. Marsh and Sam, we come to call him, was a legally signed player for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I told you not to worry. I found Sam in a village just north of Marsport. He's a Klugel hunter.
A what?
A Klugel hunter. Klugels are fast little animals that run about 80 miles an hour, and the hunters go out and throw rocks at them and kill them. Sam's a Klugel hunter. He ought to be a pretty good pitcher.
How about the other clubs? What happens if they get Klugel hunters?
Oh, they won't. You see, it's basically contrary to Martian psychology. They won't ever leave their own villages.
Then how come Sam left?
Well, it was an unfortunate accident, really. You see, when I first met him, I gave him a stick of chewing gum.
Yeah?
Well, he got hooked.
What do you mean, hooked?
Well, for Martians, the chicle seems to be habit-forming. Sam is a gum addict. Well, naturally, as soon as this was discovered, the traffic was prohibited. There's a death penalty for importing of chewing gum to Mars. But it was too late for Sam, so he came out with me.
You mean all we gotta do is keep him supplied with chewing gum?
That's right. I told you I'd take care of it, didn't I? Now you've got your left-handed pitcher.
Sam pitched that night. He struck out 27 batters, and we won 3-0. Horse Kelly, the catcher, had a little trouble at first, but he soon figured out how to get around it. He'd just hold his mitt up and close his eyes, and when he heard a thunk, he'd reach in and pull the ball out and throw it back to Sam. You can imagine what it was like being a batter up there against Sam. Pitcher's mound is only 60 feet away from the plate as it is. And with Sam's 32-foot arm, well, we didn't lose the game the rest of the season. Of course, we started out so far behind that by the last game of the season, we were tied with the Milwaukees, and we were playing them at Milwaukee. The winner of this game won the pennant. Of course, it was a lead pipe cinch for us. Marsh and Sam had pitched every day since he joined the club. He looked real cute out on a mound, standing 18 inches high in his little Dodgers uniform and in that long 32-foot arm. We had taken a finished batting practice at Milwaukee County Stadium, and I was standing next to Willie Castle's box talking to him.
Well, it looks like I won't have to be embarrassed about owning the Los Angeles Dodgers anymore, eh?
That's right. With Sam pitching, that means we win the pennant and the series.
Well, I think that's very nice. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking of taking the whole team on a barnstorming tour through Mars after the series is over.
Hey, Joe! Joe! Oh, Mr. Castle.
Well, what's the matter?
It's Sam. Sam!
Well, what's the matter? Is anything wrong with him? Did he get his chewing gum?
Yeah, he got his chewing gum, but he's just lying on the floor in the locker room moaning.
He is. We better get a doctor.
Yeah, and all those scales keep falling off him.
Oh, no, no.
What's the matter?
I know what it is.
What?
It's the molting season. All the scales will fall off. It'll take him a week to grow new scales.
But he can pitch, can't he?
No, he can't. Any violent movement would bring on great pain.
Well, there goes the ball game. Marsh and Sam can't pitch. We're dead.
Rabbit put it mild. We were good and dead. We pitched Harry Kuznowski, our best human pitcher, but our best human pitcher was none too good. He rose to the occasion, however, and the score was tied going into the last half of the ninth.
That's the way, Harry, old boy. That's the way, party. Come on, Harry. You can do it, baby.
Unfortunately, he couldn't. He hit a streak of wildness and walked three straight men. Things were very quiet in the Dodgers' dugout. One more walk would force in a run. The ball game would be over. Then as we all sat there staring out at the mound where Harry was sweating, we heard a little shuffling noise.
Oh, what's that? Sam! Sam, what are you doing out here?
And then with the little squeaks that he used for talking, Sam told us what he wanted to do. He wanted to pitch.
But, Sam, you can't. You're molting. Your scales.
All right, Sam, all right. If that's the way you want it, you get out there. You pitch to that one batter. It's two out. You strike him out, it'll go to extra innings, and we'll win the ball game.
And So Marsh and Sam trudged out to the pitcher's mound, his tiny legs lagging with great pain. You could just tell the little guy was hurting bad.
Now pitching for Los Angeles, Marsh and Sam.
We knew that Sam could do it now. We only had to face one batter and we'd get our chance again. Horst threw the ball out to him and Sam stood there, his eye on the end of his 32-foot arm, blinking with pain.
All right, batter up. Let's get a batter in there.
The umpire called for the batter and nobody came out of the Milwaukee dugout.
Hey, come on, let's go. Hey, Kirch, get a man up in there.
What's the matter, Baldy?
Let's get a batter in there. You're delaying the game.
What do you mean I'm delaying the game?
You get a batter up there.
But I got a batter up there.
What do you mean? There's nobody in the batter's box.
Baldy, I got a contract here for you to read.
What are you talking about?
Here, read it.
Well, of course, everybody knows what happened. The Milwaukee Braves had signed an intelligent virus from the moons of Jupiter. He was up there in the batter's box, but of course you couldn't see him without an electron microscope. He walked on four straight pitches, forcing in a run, and the Milwaukees won the pennant. But like I say, that's baseball. You can't win them all.
This was from the world of X-1. Tonight's story, Martian Sam, an original story written for NBC Radio by Ernest Canoy. Executive producer, Robert Wogan. Thank you, and good night.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 3rd, 1957 on NBC. And so closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.